Welcome to Movers and Shakers, Porch Group Media's thought leadership podcast. Technological advancements continue to reshape marketing and consumer behavior. The CTV penetration rate in the U.S. rose to an all-time high in 2023, with 88% of American households owning at least one connected TV device. And as the era of third-party cookies comes to an end, the significance of first-party data takes center stage in the realm of digital marketing and customer insights. Hyper-personalization provides relevant experiences, forging stronger connections and driving deeper engagement. In today's episode, we're going to take a closer look at key trends that will arise in the upcoming year so you can prepare your 2024 media playbook. So without further ado, let's jump right in.
Thank you for joining our webinar today. We'll be talking about media trends to kickstart 2024. And my name is Larissa Bedgood. I am the head of marketing here at Porch Group Media. So joining us today, we have Michelle Taves, and she is the group GM of Porch Marketing Group, and Todd Dezik, who is the senior VP of digital and analytics. So welcome, Michelle and Todd.
Thank you. I cannot believe we're talking about 2024 already.
I know. We were just putting out some, data facts in July, and it's like, wow, we are, I don't know how many shopping days until the holidays, but I guess I better get on it.
Does this mean I can get a pumpkin spice latte this afternoon?
Yeah, you can.
I don't think we're there yet.
So as we were putting this together, this is one of the fun slides that I had before we got into, some of the where we're headed. I really wanted to include where we have been. I love, and I think when Michelle and Todd and I discussed this slide, we had a couple of chuckles. Cocaine tooth drops, those actually were for pain. So that was a thing. Todd, Michelle, any other, fun little insights on this slide?
Just the only thing I want to add is I am actually grateful I was not around in the 15th and 16th century. I know I'm a bit older, but not quite there. So,
well, I do remember finding old rolls of film and getting them developed, and then it was like a nice.
Yes.
I guess that replaces now. You'll get the memories will show up on your photo and when you open your phone, and you'll see things from like 5 or 6 years ago that you kind of get that same moment, but it's crazy to think that you don't develop pictures anymore.
As the statement I have, we've come a long way, baby. So we will get into trends, but I thought this was a really, really interesting little tidbit here. So the world's first television commercial aired on July 1st, 1941, during a game between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Philadelphia Phillies. Is that the team name? Did I say that right? So the ad was actually for Bulova Watches. That company is still in business today. So pay attention. This is a very quick clip. I'm going to play it live. So hopefully the sound is working. Did you hear it?
That's okay. I don't think the sound says much, so we're good.
Okay, says is America runs on Bulova time. So that was the first commercial.
Right. I think it was probably just adapted from a radio ad, right? It's like talking with a picture in the background. I mean, it's crazy to think how far things have come.
And how far we've come, right, Todd? Now we talk about not just commercial content, but we talk about where are you going to place it? What does that look like, right? Is it OTT? Is it linear? Is it YouTube? Is it within a game? I mean, we just have so many more options than we ever had at the very beginning.
Right. And I think this is, and we wanted this for that context. So the first ad in 1941, right? We just saw it, which looked like it was a radio ad with some sort of video behind it. 14 years later, it was $1 billion in TV ad revenue. And that's in 1955 dollars, right? So that's a huge growth. And then the next 12 years, it gets up, centuples, right? 7.5 billion, because there was three channels. Everybody watched them, and every company could reach any consumer they wanted simply by running an ad on television in prime time. And then things started to change, right? So cable television got introduced. Nielsen started the concept of, instead of making viewership, they broke it down into who's watching what program at what time, right? So it's kind of age and demo breakouts that started in the late 70s, early 80s. And then by the end of the 1980s, half of all US households were watching television on cable. And that was important because instead of three channels, you now had 200 channels. So what you were watching Thursday night at 9 really scattered, right? And that's kind of what started off this trend. And then meanwhile, the internet comes up and the first banner ad gets released in 1994. We start doing cookies to understand who's seeing the ads and what kind of people are behind those ads. And then TiVo releases the DVR right around the turn of the century. So now that sets us on this motion that now no one's actually even watching TV live, right? And you know, by not quite 2007, that's when the streaming era begins, you know, and now we've got this, now we're under fire soon after about cookies tracking people on the digital web, on digital properties. And you see this merger of this confluence from, you could reach everybody at any time just by advertising a commercial on a television program at the right time, to now anybody can consume any content at any time, and it's on the advertiser to understand, is this person the right customer prospect for my ads spending or not, right? And that's kind of what sets up all the trends we're going to talk about.
Right. So obviously, as you said, you know, just last summer, in 2022, streaming overtook cable. For media consumption in the US for the first time. I mean, it's amazing, you know, when you look at that first commercial, how far we've come, and much better commercials now.
Well, and to me, it's also not just the content, right? I think that people are beginning to see, brands specifically, like mass targeting might not be worth the spend it was at one point, right? Like at one point it made sense. You try to get as many impressions as you possibly can. But let's face it, linear TV has gotten more and more expensive to be able to get some of those spots. And then people aren't necessarily sitting down in front of their TV like they do before, right? They plan ahead of time, they stream it, they fast forward through all the ads, right? They're not using that DVR the way that they used to. And so programmatic CTV is just taking off because you can actually hit the impressions and the people that you want to versus paying that extreme amount of money. Right. And then not be able to really target it or take it down to measurement at all.
Right. That's a great point, Michelle, because it's no, before you would put an ad on a show and you would sponsor a show. And with streaming kind of disrupts that because you just want to reach Michelle. You just want to reach Larissa. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what show they're going to be watching at what time. Maybe they'll watch an entire season of Jack Ryan in one night. But that's their Thursday or that's, you know, their Wednesday, right? And so it's not about the program, it's about the person and making sure you reach the right person. I mean, incidentally, I looked this up. I didn't prep you guys on it, but I looked up, if you take that $7.5 billion in 1977 and adjust for inflation, it's today that's about $39 billion. So wow. If you look at it at $43 billion projected by 2026, that's about equivalent in terms of real dollars as the peak of TV in 1977. So streaming and advertising spend on CTV is, that's why it's trend number one, right?
Right.
The entire peak of television in the glory days, we're experiencing that now with advertisers flocking to CTV.
And even if you look at the industry, right? All of us in marketing know that 2024 has been a little bit of a pause. When it comes to marketing spend and those type of statistics. However, if you look at what CTV is doing, even though the marketing is pausing in a lot of different ways, CTV is still growing.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a great point. On this next slide, I know you're going to talk a little bit about our audience targeting, but just, you know, personally, a couple of things. So I have a French bulldog and I buy costumes. Yes, I do, on Halloween.
You just admitted that to the world, Larissa.
That's a little personal tidbit for all of you out there, so you know Larissa a little bit better. I was targeted like a couple weeks later with dog clothing or supplies. And, you know, I, as a consumer, actually appreciated that. It's like, okay, that's taking my interest, and it was a really relevant experience. So I paid attention to that brand. Same with traveling. I had looked up a travel purse or something like that. And then I was targeted soon after with travel merchandise. And it was so relevant. You know, I made note of those companies. And I think that just goes to show like how that precision targeting is so much more effective than that broad audience reach.
Right. And that's part of why this is here on CTV, is it allows you to, you know, look for that signal, right? The consumer shopper took an action, showed interest in a category. And if you're an advertiser in that category, now you can use that to get an impression in front of Larissa on whatever device and whatever content she's looking at. And in particular, CTV, which are those commercials are harder to produce. They're expensive. The media is worth more because it's very engaging. And so if you can qualify it to somewhere in the funnel, top of funnel, middle funnel, lower funnel, but just, hey, this is the right person in the immediate term, you'll get a bigger bang for your dollar, right? And because, you know, with the things of cookies going away, it's less, you know, as especially, you know, about this time next year, just the fact that you went to a website, you could do some retargeting that could create an audience that could be distributed through the ecosystem. That will go away, and it will have to be replaced with something more. I consented, I signed up, and I gave my name and address, and this is who I am as a person, my strong identity elements. And then you can collaborate, you know, with the advertiser looking for that same consumer across all of these platforms, right? And I think what that does is then that opens up the ability of that brand to say, oh, well, Larissa bought a dog costume from me. Let me go see, where did I reach her? How much did I spend to convert her to a customer? Mm-hmm. And you can get very precise measurement that before was lacking on television, which is really exciting for brands. And Michelle, I think that's why we're seeing that channel grow, while the rest of the advertising market is seeing in general a little bit of a pause or a flat compared to last year.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the other thing that's really interesting that we're starting to see is the ability to do things quicker. Right. And timing is just so important. So, Larissa, in your example, if you were looking for a dog and somebody came back to you 6 months later and said, hey, here's a great idea for a dog costume, that probably wouldn't be as interesting to you.
Right.
As if you started to see content right within a week, within days, right. A week, moments. We all know that like abandoned cart and all that has been around for a long time. But being able to take some of that information and be able to take it to a TV commercial or to other forms of marketing, right, is just hugely impactful. And one of the things that you have on this slide, it really talks about purchase intent, right? I think that we're all really familiar with like demographic targeting, online browsing targeting, but like really being able to get to that purchase intent and understand the timing behind it and be able to react on it in an urgent manner, that sometimes just kind of seals the deal for the consumer.
Quickly before I move on to the next slide, you know, being a porch company, we talk a lot about the pre-move, new movers, and homeowners. You know, I thought it was just important to kind of point that out, that is something that is a lot of brands may not target, but it is such a impactful segment. These are consumers who are often in a I am going to spend mentality. I don't know if you have any more comments on that either, Todd or Michelle, but you know, that's just something just to kind of keep in mind as you're developing your audiences and segments.
Right. That is important. Like if you think ownership, home ownership journey, where you are in your life stage, are you moving to a bigger place and starting a family? Are you downsizing, becoming an empty nester? Those sorts of big life events say a lot about, you know, your product choices that you'll make. And you can certainly think of categories, moving space, like furniture, very powerful. And they've been doing mover marketing for a long time, but understanding those segments within the move and how that someone's changing from one life stage to another life stage, that's important for all brands to understand and change the messaging that they're giving to that consumer, because they recognize that change. And that is an important piece of what we do at Porch Group Media.
Yeah. One of the things that I find interesting about this year, and I don't know if other people have kind of run across this, but with the mover segment and the mover behavior trending a bit down, I think it's right around 18% down compared to last year. I think that almost scares brands, and they kind of moved some of their budget to other things. But as I think about it, I think that the people that are moving are so much more valuable, right? Because it's a tough economic time, interest rates are up, and they're still choosing to move, right? And so that person is just such a stronger indicator of the move and the need to move that I almost think brands should like double down on it, because mm-hmm. the conversion is going to be better at this time than when there's massive amounts of people moving.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And you're right. It is a miss because the audience will right-size itself, right? To your point, moving's down for other trends. And if you're in the market actively identifying and reaching consumers in those states, you know, it's cyclical, right? There'll be a backlog, and we'll be followed. This decrease in movers will be followed by a wave where everybody's moving, right? And you'll have to plan your move 6 months before you know you're moving, right? And so that's, if brands are in market and looking at the size of the segment, they'll be able to dynamically shift their spend, versus it's much harder to say, I'm dark on a segment. What do I have to do to turn it on to take advantage of the trend? Because if you're not prepared, you might miss the wave completely, right? Just by being out.
Yeah. All right. So I thought this was just kind of a good follow-up.
Yeah, and you're right. That's the other thing. It's not the presence of the CTV ad. You know, one of the things that changed in that slide that I kind of neglected was in 1941, it was a TV commercial, and that was the only component of the campaign, was to put a TV commercial out during the baseball game. And with connected TV, it's about the person, and we touched on that, but it also means it's less channel specific. So it's not just that you're getting this rich, impactful TV ad during content that the consumer reached out for on a streaming service that they signed up for and that sort of thing, but then it's gently echoing that same impression across all the channels, whether that's somewhere else on the screen, in your inbox, on your social apps, those sorts of things, but combining a cohesive message across all media so that the consumer sees your brand and becomes top of mind. And if you backdrop that with, hey, we know they're entering this funnel in this category, you get a winning message. And that's the other way to mitigate. It's not so much the cost of the TV ad. You really get your bang for the buck because the consumer consented to that streaming service. We know that they saw the ad, using that information on a consented basis to then change what you, how you treat them on the other platforms. That's where you make up that investment level. Mm-hmm.
Love this. We've been talking a lot about first party data. We have another slide on all party data, which we'll get into. But there's been so much talk about the importance of first party data. Michelle, Todd, do you want to kind of, you know, talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. I'll start it, and then I'm sure that Todd can follow me up. I think that what we've seen over the last couple of years is just a lot of noise, right, around third-party data. Where does it come from? How are you getting it? Do you have the proper consents necessary to be able to utilize it for marketing across digital, offline, and in all different ways? And so us, along with other companies that have access to first-party data, we just have a really stronger desire to be able to utilize that to create really great campaigns. One of the reasons why we are building a retail media network, right, is because we have the ability to get access to really great first-party data and then create customized campaigns based upon that data in a very privacy data compliant manner. And then being able to take it all the way down to attribution. It's just really important with where the marketing industry is going today. And so we have definitely had more of an increased focus on first party data. How can we use it? What are all the different ways that first party data is really helpful as we're kind of walking away from a me too, you know, in commoditized data and walking into a leader in the mover and the property space?
No, exactly. And there's a subtlety there too, is consumers, you know, there's been this backlash against those sort of tracking identifiers like cookies that was mentioned earlier. So with consumers are very sensitive about their privacy, you can't sort of infer that identity. You need that relationship with the consumer that they consented, that you know who they are. And so that's one of the big pushes of first party data, is have that interaction with your customers, whether it's, you know, just in the transaction or in where brands are really looking at, in other ways that are outside the transaction, so that they feel safe and they consent to their identity, so that you can understand who they are. And then you can reach them in ways that are sensitive to their privacy concerns, right? And I think that's the big push as well, is the technology and how consumers have gone from what's a cookie to these cookies are evil, an invasion of my privacy. So that puts the onus on brands to really collect and have a stronger relationship with their customers and prospects, so that they provide their identity, right? So then you can safely identify them in the advertising ecosystem and measure performance against that.
I think the last webinar we did, Michelle, that was actually on five reasons why first party data is your best friend. So yeah, we've definitely, we talk a lot about that here and the importance of first party data, and really actually the next slide, all party data, you know, as part of the data ecosystem, which I will get to all party data.
Right, and that's the segue. I was trying not to jump the slide. that's exactly right, and that's how we, you know, as Porch Group Media, and why we're Porch Group Media, and we don't think about it as a data company anymore, because what we're looking for is, we have consumers who have consented, we've gotten their identity through their consent, and now we're looking for brands who want to collaborate, you know, who also have identity of their consumers, or publishers or connected TV ad platforms that have consented identity, and collaborate in a way that the brand can get their message to that consumer in a privacy sensitive way. And so that's why it becomes, it's not third party data in the traditional sense. It's not just first party data, because streaming platform A that, you know, Todd logged in last night to watch Only Murders in the Building, right? I consented with them, but then I may have also consented to Porch because I'm getting the home I'm buying inspected, right? And so neither one of them view that as third party data, but it's all party, because we're collaborating together. And I think that's why you'll see this term emerge more in, you know, in the next 6 months and well into 2024. It's all party data.
I think before moving on, one of the things that I don't think I knew as much about was zero party data. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're talking a little bit more, and those are like those customer preference centers. For example, like if you're going onto a retail website, a home improvement retailer, you're like, right, you want to receive gardening information and window information. It's interesting just how the different layers of data can really work together to create one customer view.
Yeah. Right. Well, and each part, I think, is just really essential, because, for example, using your example, if somebody opted into gardening and they want to receive it via SMS, right, instead of email, and then all of a sudden you send them an email, you know, right, most likely they're not going to respond in the way that they, that you want them to, because they opted in to receive the information in a different way.
Right.
And so just being able to capture and tie all of that information together, right, is just so very important. It's beyond the media execution and beyond the campaign, right? It's being able to, because tying it together is a data science and art all in its own, right? And being able to just have that rich information about one single person, so that when you get to the campaign, right, you're not only creating a campaign that's pertinent, but you're also creating a campaign where they want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's a great point, Michelle, because it's not just a replacement for, you know, like cookies. It's also, the term is replacing what we used to call omnichannel, right? Yeah. Because it's understanding how that consumer is consented and what channels, and making sure that you're interacting with that consumer. That's a really good point, Michelle.
So data in the clean room. This is probably something that a lot of people are a little confused about. Can you, Todd, right, maybe give us a little overview here?
Well, no, and that's a strong, it falls perfectly behind all party and having this sensitive name and address PII. Consumers also, and we've gone through this in our company Evolution, aren't comfortable with, you know, databases of their name and address, email and phone number floating around and being exchanged between brands, even if it's for good purposes. And so this concept has emerged in order to collaborate and do that matching safely. And that's the clean room, right? And the kind of the concept here is the ability for us to match, you know, our customers can match their POS data with who they reached on an ad platform, but neither the ad platform or the brand have to share name and address with each other, because the clean room is a concept of encrypting it, doing that matching in a way behind the scenes so that neither side sees what they don't know, right? And so I thought that was, when I started, I thought that was a way to simplify it, Michelle. I don't know if I made it more complicated talking about it. What are your thoughts?
No, perfect. Todd, I thought you did a great job. I mean, it basically just allows people to share data in a way that makes them feel really comfortable with right, one and another.
And that is a term that's been buzzing for years. It's been building for years, right? Now everybody has a clean room and there's multiple clean rooms, and even us as Porch Group Media will be involved with different clean rooms for different purposes. So it's a new way of doing, it replaces the SFTP, right? That's
exactly
one way to think about it.
Yeah. That's interesting. one last trend. I think we're close to time, but I think this kind of really sums up everything we've been talking about. I love the slide.
Yeah, and this is the consequence. If we talked about it, like with connected TV, and how it's really powerful, and the trend isn't just that you only run TV commercials through connected TV, it's you combine it with impressions across all the other channels as well to really take the advantage of the overlap between channels rather than just exhausting the frequency on one channel. And so then it comes back to, hey, if I understand my audience and I plan to reach them across all channels versus, you know, how much allocations do I make to Facebook? How much do I do on email marketing versus something else? And that's the natural consequence, which I think is great for brands, because when you look at it from the guise of, here's the consumers in the US that I want to convert to customers, for example, how much am I willing to spend against them? A lot of brands will think of, well, how much is the lifetime value of that customer? And so you can't get to a true cost per acquired customer if you're only looking at what you spent on social to get them to convert, or how much you spent in your programmatic. You really have to look at, here's the customer, here's all the touches I've made over the last 6 to 12 months to get them to convert, and what is my true cost per acquisition? So I think brands will love, intuitively, they've been wanting to move to this for a long time. And with the identity currency becoming more the consumer's name and address, and away from, hey, it's a DMA if it's on television, you know, it's a cookie if it's on the web, you know, it's an email address some other place, and all coming to the same, it's that person, and understanding how to reach them across all those channels will really enable that sort of detailed LTV to CAC analysis.
That's actually the last slide, I believe. So I did have a couple of, yes. we had a couple of questions that came in. I think we're just about at time, but if you have to drop off, we will send you the recording. If you can stick around for a few minutes, we'll get to those. And if you have not had a chance to ask a question, feel free to submit that. We'll see if we can get to that. So this one was kind of interesting. With so many changes going on now with social media, do you have any high level thoughts on where social media advertising may be headed? For example, Threads, you know, Twitter is now X. Todd, before I put you on the spot too much, I do want to tell you, I have a webinar with you that I, on social media trends, folks that you can attend to delve into that more deeply on August 31st. But in the, you know, if you had any thoughts, initial thoughts.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. Advertisers have left X or Twitter for reason with the turnover and the management of that platform. I don't know if there's been a big flock back to it. And it's interesting with Threads as a replacement, it's still, I don't think Meta has opened up ad units within Thread. I would suspect that it will be swept into Business Manager the same way you really don't distinguish between Instagram and Facebook. Threads would be a new one that they would put within that wall, within that kind of platform itself. But that community is still developing. It's interesting to, I don't know if brands will look at it or what kind of, someone described it as it's sort of still a happy place.
Right.
Like the internet used to be before, you know, cynicism set in. So between those two, those are interesting to watch. I don't know, Michelle, have you seen any other new apps or trends of brands that are interested in sweeping in to their campaigns?
No, I have not. Not to date, but it's always good things to keep an eye on. I'm sure that they will come along for sure.
Right. I wonder if that is because of what you said before, is brands are pulling back a little bit, advertising, the economy is a little uncertain. One thing brands do is they pull back this kind of testing aggressiveness, right? Like, what's the next best thing? We saw connected TV, like, you know, it's just a new way to think about TV commercials and combining it. I think that's the new thing that brands are interested in. And I haven't seen a trend for something else just yet.
No, me neither.
And then the last question that we had is, can you explain second party data?
Sure, I'll take that one. It's funny because we've had this discussion so many times at this point. So second party data is really anything that you can do to enhance your first party data. So the data might not have come directly from the customer, right? But the data came from something the customer did. So for example, second party could be, data connected to a POS system and you're contacting, you know, you're adding in transactional details. It could be you're adding in additional insights based upon behavior to that consumer. So the consumer didn't necessarily provide that information, but you're able to track to the consumer and attach it, and it does not necessarily include PII.
Right. Another
good example of it is like the co-ops, right? So data co-ops, depending on what kind of brand you are, like the retailer co-ops have been a big thing. So you're sharing, here's my first party customers. All your competitors are sharing the same thing, and you're borrowing that information to reach out to those prospects. That's another way of thinking of second party data, right? Because you didn't rent it, you traded it, you collaborated with your cohort of competitors so that you could all win.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you found this session helpful. For more information on our audience and media solutions, please visit porchgroupmedia.com.